You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 12th of November, 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, I am very pleased to say that today we have our most esteemed guest, Mr. I, with us. Once again, the man with the most amazing memory, looking back over the last 91 years of British history, and today I am hoping we are going to learn a little bit more about the British Union of Fascists. Mr. I, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on again, and how are you doing, sir?
Hi, thank you. I'm very well, thank you. Now, the chief reason for Mosley to found the British Union of Fascists was economic. He saw that the problems of unemployment and our financial difficulties stemmed from the system of international trade. He realised that the British Empire was could be made self-sufficient, as we had territory all over the world with all sorts of climates, which meant to say we could grow things from potatoes to oranges and other fruits. And so his idea was to make the empire self-sufficient and not having to bother about the ups and downs in the foreign exchange markets and all that business. You see, it was possible in those days for a Wall Street financier gambling on, say, the Chicago wheat futures could put a British farmer out of a job, because they were manipulating the price of food products. So the decision was, right, we'll stop international trade, we'll make our empire completely self-controlled. We had the manpower from the really top scientists and engineers down to an enormous amount of labour, particularly in India and places like that. So we had the manpower to do it. And the pound sterling was the world's leading currency, so that could stand on its own feet. And so That was the plan. But of course, unfortunately, it didn't come to pass that way, because the international situation with the deep depressions in most of the world's economies were undercutting us in all sorts of ways. And of course, the financiers in those days were a very powerful lot. And so it was rather unfortunate that Mosley wasn't able to bring that plan to pass. There were some marvellous characters in the British Union at the time. There was Neil Francis Hawkins. He was Mosley's right-hand man. He organised the marches and kept a general the office running. There was Raven Thompson. He was a philosopher, a very learned man who had German ancestry and distant relations still living in Germany. And so when the decision was taken by Churchill to arrest under the 18B all the leading fascists of the day, he was a particular suspect. And most of the ordinary British Union members, of course, including Mosley, I say ordinary members, but including Mosley himself and the top lieutenants, were kept in either prisons or concentration camps. But Raven Thompson was held at the interrogation centre in Latchmere House on Ham Common, where he was subjected to the constant third-degree questioning, that they tried to break him. But, of course, being a true black shirt spirit, he didn't break. But after the war, when he was released, the effect on his health was quite apparent, and he died at an early age, which was a great loss to everybody. Another character they were very suspicious of was one Charlie Watts. He was the trade union leader for the London taxi cabs. And they thought, being in that position and having this great mobility at his command, but they thought he'd be a danger if he turned against Britain. And another interesting character at the headquarters was the industrial advisor on Mosley's staff, B.P.G. Taylor. Now, he turned out to be an MI5 plant. His real name was McTurk. Mosley got to know about this, and he could see that the sort of humour in it, because he knew that McTurk was an MI5 agent, and McTurk knew that Mosley knew. a comical situation bordering on farce. But anyway, he was very useful, because a similar sort of thing happens today when, if anybody they find out is a member of the British National Party, they're liable to lose their jobs if they're in a sensitive employment, say working for the local council or the NHS or something like that. But Mosley didn't care, because we weren't committing any acts of treason at all. And that was the worst crime you could commit in those days, was treason. And of course nowadays the worst offence you can make is to call a black man a nigger. It was treason in those days, and of course they were never able. No member of the British Union, to our knowledge, ever did attempt any treason. Of course, we had a bit of an awkward situation with William Joyce. He wasn't the original Lord Hawhor, broadcasting for Germany. He was his name escapes me at the moment. He spoke with an upper-class accent, and that's how the Hawhor of Lord Hawhor stemmed from. William Joyce was the son of Irish-American immigrants to New York, and where he was born, and of course that made him an American citizen. The other chap who was when the Allies overran Germany, and he was taken into custody. No action could be taken with him because he was a citizen of the Irish Republic, which was neutral during the war. So they having got William Joyce in their hands, they thought, they must do something to get him convicted on a treason charge. And that was the excuse they made, was that when he travelled to Germany in the August of 1939, he travelled on a British passport. It went to appeal, like the standard procedure, and two of the lords said that yes, it was an act of treason against the crown, but the other one didn't, and he said, when he went to Germany, he was an American citizen, and when he was broadcasting to England, he had, in fact, taken German nationality. But now, through the rigmarole, they decided, two of the three law lords who were given the task of overseeing the report, they decided, yes, it was an act of treason. But the third one deferred, and he said, we'll hang a man for making a false statement when applying for a British passport. So, of course, poor Joyce, he knew there was no other way out, and he went, and it was remarked how bravely he went to his death, just like John Amory did. And when he realised that his appeal would not succeed. And a lot of the British Union people went to Joyce's house and sat with his family just at the time of his execution, which I thought was very, very good of them to do that.
That was really honourable of them to do that. Just when you were talking there, it reminded me actually of Rudolf Hess and the way that he was tortured as well. And, the allegation that he made that they had messed with his head and that they had tortured him when he was at the Nuremberg trials. And what you were talking about there with this philosopher, this raven chap, I mean, that that's the proof of it, isn't it? That Rudolf Hess was speaking the truth, because the same thing was done to this philosopher, and the evidence was there when he came out that his health had deteriorated. Anyway, please do continue.
Yeah, exactly so. Yeah, they tried to break him, you see. As I mentioned, he still had distant relatives in Germany. And, of course, he was the chief suspect. But they didn't break him mentally, but they did physically. And he died not long after the end of the war, after he'd been released. So it was a terrible thing, really, that, you know, our own people who were arrested and incarcerated without charge or trial or term set or anything. And, you know, it was just completely contrary to our ancient laws of freedom. And I think it was when Churchill went to America after Roosevelt had decided on his lease land product, he took with him an original copy of the Magna Carta that belonged to Salisbury Cathedral, and he presented it to the American people. Now, what hypocrisy! And there was the man who had imprisoned his own people without charge. Thinking villains. Right, now, go back to Mosley's headquarters. There were some, I mentioned P.C. Taylor, the MI5 agent. Of course, he was very useful as the industrial advisor, because similar to today, people who are found to be members of the British Union often lost their jobs. And I know of at least one case where he took the employer to court, and the judge, the magistrates, awarded the chap a month's wages in lieu of notice. So he served a useful purpose. Now, who else was there? There was Major DeLasso, DSOMC. He served in both the Boer and the World War One, in which he lost an arm. Also, to arrest those men on suspicion that they might be traitors. Of course, another suspect was Mosley's friend from the days when they were both members of the Royal Flying Club. That was Geoffrey Dorman. He was a suspect, and he was taken into custody. And another interesting character was a young woman called Faye Taylor. Now, she was quite a case, because she used to ride in a motorbike on the speedway, you know, going around corners, kicking up a lot of dirt. And after the war, she got a job selling Jaguars to Americans in California. So she was quite a girl. And of course, a loyal British citizen. No suspicion of any treachery with her. And another reason thing that is what was the famous motorist whose car was called the Bluebird?
Sir Malcolm Campbell.
Sir Malcolm Campbell. That's right, yeah, Sir Malcolm Campbell. Yeah, when he attempted the world speed record in 1935, he flew a pennant on his car of the Black Shirt Motoring Cup. Although, as far as I know, I don't think he was a member, but he was the sort of chap that would have been attracted to Moseley. They were that sort of type of a person, men of action, shall we say, that were attracted to Moseley. And I'll say that this girl, Faye Taylor, well, of course, we had an enormous following of women, but I think that's mostly, well, the same as Hitler did. And I think that's mostly because Moseley was the strong man that most women yearned for. Faye Taylor. Really interesting characters.
Chivalrous and honourable. Chivalrous and honourable men that are standing up for their country and standing up for their people, and they've got a following of good men around them, and that's what women are attracted to. When they see honourable men and they're well-liked and they're decent people, women are attracted to that. They're not attracted to individuals on their own. They're attracted to groups that look like they're going to be safe among them. And obviously, they'd be safe among the BUF.
The British Union had a very large women's section. The leader was Anne Brock Gibbs, the wife of a solicitor, and she was an extremely smart woman, and she designed the women's uniform, which of course was very modest in those days. It was a beret, a cardigan, all in black of course, and a skirt which ended sort of halfway between the knees and the ankles, so very modest. And of course, flat shoes, no high heels or anything. And they used to take part in all the marches. And of course, they were a target for the opposition. You know, the sort of types they would, of course, would attack the women because they couldn't fight back like the men could. So it was organised that the boys, as they were called, and took the sort of 16 to 18 years old before they could become a fully-fledged black shirt. They were designated to march either side of the women and protect them from attack. Of course, a role that they thought was marvellous. You know, the youth of the movement protecting the women.
Well, I bet. Well, it's necessary. I mean, that's disgusting. That's disgusting that they would attack the.
By the board, isn't it?
Yeah, it's disgusting that they would attack the weakest.
Women are not feminine, are they?
Yeah, it's disgusting that they would attack the weakest people there. But that's just predictable. I mean, they're just horrible all round. The opposition.
Yeah,
the opposition. Well, we should probably end about here, Mr. I. I think we've got half an hour's worth there. So thank you very much coming on today. Hopefully we'll hear again from you next week. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Carolyn Yeager. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.